Advocatus Diaboli, Juanch de Medellin, Diane Waugh, and Gaius Bendo presiding.
Welcome to the Devil Advocates.
Louis C.K. of the Cellar has been charged and convicted of the following sins against the culture: consorting with the devil, treason against the movement by levying war against women in comedy, and giving the devil and his minion aid and comfort by standing idly by while his handlers attempted to end the career of women in comedy, bearing false witness for delivering a bullshit apology to save his ass, an aggravated failure to be about shit. The archbishops of the culture have passed their sentence. Louis C.K. has been canceled and banished from the cookout and shall be shunned and shamed henceforth and for all time. Toll the bell, close the book, and snuff the candle. Down-ass members of the culture, we come not to justify his actions. We come not to defend him. We come simply to ask the question, is he redeemable? Is there a penance he can do to become uncancelled and regain entry into the sacred cookout? We know that by interceding and advocating for the salvation of excommunicated heretics, we risk our own place in the sacred cookout. We risk being branded heretical apologists. And after solemn reflection, we have decided that we don't give a fuck. If nuance and cool-headed self-reflection die, the culture will follow. Love is making us ask and answer these questions for ourselves. We hope love drives you to ask the same questions. We want to engage you, but not on social media feed, where the loudest or most viscerally pleasing idea wins. We want to engage you as individuals, so message all the love and hate and everything in between, and don't forget to nominate heretics for us to discuss in the coming weeks. Our inquiry begins with a discussion of the charges as we search the record for mitigating factors. This can be the most pernicious part of the discussion because, taken out of context, everything we say can be misconstrued as a justification for his crimes. We want to reiterate, we think he is guilty of all he has been charged with. We're simply looking for grounds to show compassion and possibly support his penance. So for anyone who doesn't know the exact blow-by-blow of what he has admitted and what has been established in the culture, in the late 90s, while he was a writer on the Chris Rock show, he asked an intern to go with him to a room, and there he masturbated in front of her. She went with him to the room. She knew it was going to be some sort of a sexual encounter. But she didn't feel cool about it. She was like an intern. He was a writer on the show. So, you know, in that instance, he did take advantage of his position to get somebody to do something that he wanted to do sexually. In 2002, at the Toronto Comedy Festival, he invited two comedians, they're a comedy duo, back to his hotel room. And once in the hotel room, pretty much right away, as they sat down, he asked them if he could masturbate in front of them. They kind of laughed it off. He didn't. He took off all his clothes. He began to masturbate. At some point, they tried to leave, and he went and closed the door and made sure they stayed and finished. Another woman in 2003 was inviting him to one of her shows. Another comedian was inviting him to one of her shows. And while he was on the phone with her, it became very clear to her that he was masturbating while on the phone. And in 2005, he asked a co-star on a pilot if he could jack off in front of her. This was during the taping of the show. And she declined. So these are the allegations that we know about. There are a lot. This has been one of the worst kept secrets in comedy. I know Gaius is a comedy expert, a stand-up comedy expert, comedy nerd. It's one of these things that people have been talking about since, very vocally since 2014, but over the years it was one of these things that everybody knew that Louis did creepy things with girls. I mean, did you hear anything that's not, that we haven't said in the record?
No, I haven't. I didn't hear it. And I can only say that, like, there was just kind of, like, a general, like, kind of jokiness about it when I heard it, because I used to hang out at the Comedy Cellar in the mid-2000s, and it's not like it was a thing that came up a lot, but there were a couple of times when we were, like, drinking upstairs in the Olive Branch afterwards, and, you know, somebody would just make an offhand remark, and at the time, like, you know, not having any further context around it, it was just kind of like, oh, like, these guys have some inside joke that I'm not privy to at the moment.
And, you know, I mean, Jen Kirkman on her own podcast talked about how she was reluctant to go on tour with Louis C.K., which would have been a big feather in her cap.
Yeah.
But she was reluctant to do so because of the volume of rumors that she heard about it. So, all right. So that's it. I mean, we hope you're up to speed. I know you might have read about more things that were involved here, but there is a lot of crap if you read articles about this. There's a lot of clickbait. There's a lot of articles, you know, regurgitating the same stuff and citing the same stuff and citing, you know, all of the same articles. One of the things that made this cut and dry and made this harder to deal with was that he apologized fairly quickly. You know,
well,
after yeah. It blew up, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, we are talking about these things coming out in the 90s, 2000, 2003, 2005.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously 2017 or 2018 is late.
Yeah.
For something like that to come out. So let's just jump in right to the first charge. And that's consorting with the devil in the first and second degree. So kind of the more systemic, the larger issue items and allegations that have been put forward against him is that the reason why this was the worst kept secret in comedy is because the all-powerful Dave Becky, who's his agent, shut down any talk about this or got several women to shut up about it or threaten them. I mean, it depends on who you read. You know, the allegations are many about that. As best as I can piece together, the allegations are really from the two women in the Toronto.
Yeah, they kind of kicked it off.
Right. Yeah. And so, and if you really have to go through all of the articles and all the interviews with Dave Becky about this. So his side of the story is this. He heard from someone else that the two of them were talking about the incident in the hotel room where he masturbated in front of them. And he said in that conversation, they really shouldn't be talking about that. That's the kind of thing that can blow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so
then it got back to them that mm-hmm. Dave Becky said something to that effect.
Oh, okay.
They took it very directly as a threat.
Okay.
Well, first, can we just say that Bill Cosby would actually be the worst open secret in comedy? This is like a second or third. But
oh, yeah. Agents, we're going to get to you, Bill. Don't worry about it. And I hope you get internet in jail.
Yeah.
Because then you'll be able to hear about it. But But yeah, so...
So is the charge against Dave Becky for consorting with the devil?
No, well, Dave Becky, Louis C.K.
Louis C.K.
It's Dave Becky standing idly by while Dave Becky did his dirty work for
him. And profiting.
I mean, okay, so...
And profiting by standing by. So, I mean, just to get... First, we have to... One of the elements of this crime is Dave Becky has to be the devil.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, you know, I guess... One the first discussion we should have is, was what Dave Becky said a threat? Now, these two women have said that it's not that they were denied a shot at anything. They didn't miss out. Thank you for the dap. They didn't miss out on anything in particular. They just decided not to work in any production that Dave Becky was involved in. Which, you know, I mean, Dave Becky's an incredibly powerful person.
Yeah.
So that would be very limiting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. However, I gotta say, as a plaintiff attorney, I sue on behalf of women who've been sexually harassed, quid pro quo and otherwise. And they shouldn't talk about it is not necessarily a threat.
Yeah.
On levels of threat, I would put that from like 1 to 10, I think that would be like a 1.5. I mean,
that's fair.
See, you're reading the charges of Louis C.K. and I'm getting really just like livid at the charges. But I think the thing that was interesting about the Louis C.K. situation from, and just for full disclosure, I'm not a huge, I did not know very much about Louis C.K. until he was a topic. For this, so I got to know Louis C.K. this week.
I had to do a crash course
on Louis C.K. So my first, you know, feeling about Louis C.K. was, wow, this guy's really depressing. I didn't think he was that funny.
I think what you told me was, this guy is a self-hating nihilist.
Which is actually probably accurate.
Even if you like, had his comedy and we never learned this about him, you could come to
those conclusions.
Those are themes. Okay, yeah, those are themes. So I was just like, not a fan. But then as I started reading more about how the situation unfolded, as both of you know, I've had some issues with aspects of the Me Too movement. And so I kind of have been in kind of a hate situation where I don't know who I hate more, Louis C.K. for doing what he did or the way the women were going about complaining about him. Yeah. And then it was just, and it wasn't so much as, like, I want to say very clearly, like, I don't have a problem with anyone speaking up on their assault or any issues with that. But as far as the onslaught of sexual assault allegations that have happened in the past year, now one of the things that I think has come up have been, now we've started as a public differentiating levels of sexual assault.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, like, did someone just say there's a dirty joke?
There's the rapist.
Which almost always comes up when we get to Louis C.K. or like an Aziz Ansari, because it's like, they're not Harvey Weinstein.
They're not Harvey or Bill Cosby.
And the thing is,
as a woman, you know, as a sexual assault survivor, I don't ever want to be in the camp that at all shuts any women up or makes anyone feel bad for coming forward or isn't 100% supportive of women.
We should first, I guess, mention, right, because obviously I just said, hey, these allegations wouldn't fly in a litigation context.
Yeah.
And that is
however, you know, comedy is a different industry.
Yes.
And in comedy, you work with who you want to work with. You work with your crew, you work with... Look at Adam Sandler, like, they share 80% of the cast. Every single movie shares 80% of the same cast.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. works with a lot of the same people. You know, the people who write their own ticket, they work with people they like. They work with people on the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so these two women basically could no longer be on that team anymore.
Gotcha.
And that meeting in Toronto might have been something where they would be a part of the team, and now they're not, right?
Yeah. So,
but my immediate issue as a woman and as a sexual assault survivor is that my immediate thing is, when you start blowing up about something that wasn't, when you start calling things that are not threats, or start misnaming things, then I feel like it does damage to the cause, because then it starts giving the people who don't want to listen to sexual assault survivors, the people who are, you know, rabid rape apologists.
It gives them the cartoonish examples that they want to make fun of the movement.
Yeah. Exactly. And the thing is that it's a very frustrating thing to talk about publicly. And you don't definitely want to talk about it on a public forum like Instagram. You don't want to talk about it on Facebook like this, because then it's just going to come out like, oh, you're trying to blame the victim. However, I think one of the purposes of this show is figuring out how to talk about things in a much more nuanced way so that we can address what needs to be addressed without kind of messing up the argument in, to use a legal term,
muddying the water,
setting up a precedent where people don't listen to us.
Yeah. I mean, I think the deeper question, because it gets layered, especially like because we're already like two steps removed with Dave Becky, and then it's hearsay between all of them. So I think the more nuanced way of looking at it is, would it be reasonable for them to have assumed that it was a threat, hearing back about him saying something in a conversation as well? Because he heard from a third party what they said, and then they heard from another party.
So why are we involved in this game of telephone? Yeah, it's a game of telephone. Yeah.
And so I think that it does, to me, make sense to make the logical jump.
Here's the argument.
Yeah.
Dave Becky's a kingpin. So Dave Becky's not going to get caught on a mic anywhere threatening you.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Did someone die back there? Okay.
Poster fell and it was my fault.
So, you know, Dave Becky doesn't have to threaten you to threaten you. So if Dave Becky would be threatening them,
he doesn't have to actually threaten them.
It likely would come through a third party.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, again, I feel like...
Now, bringing it back to more of a legal argument. Now, as a photographer, we come into these issues a lot as far as, like, who's allowed to be photographed, who's not allowed to be photographed, and stuff like that. And usually, you have to show damages. Basically, in order to say that it was a threat, you kind of have to show evidence of said threat, like they lost out on gigs or there was a contract that got pulled or something
like
that.
That's another thing that's problematic from a legal standpoint, which is they remove themselves from the situation. Anytime you talk to an employment attorney, I'm an employment attorney. Anytime you talk to an employment attorney, they tell you don't quit, get fired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you quit, then it's always going to be couched as you moving on because of your own thing. And the... you know, the level that it has to reach to make it a constructive termination is really high. So that they admitted that they decided not to even try to work with Dave Becky. I think we'd be having a different conversation if they even tried to get a gig with his production company and they never heard back. Then they can say, hey, you know, I tried to get a gig, I never heard back.
But that's one of but sexual assault is one of those things where, you know, maybe you can't wait it out because, you know, constantly being harassed by a guy and his penis or the threat of his penis. and you know, that could be a reason to walk off a set, you know, without and lose out on stuff and have to start all over again. So I think that's where I think the moral question and the legal question kind of diverge.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess as the threshold, we need to answer the threshold.
Yeah.
And is Dave Becky the devil? Do we have evidence that he actively held women down? And I looked for it. I got to tell you, I looked for it. Obviously, past rumors. I looked for Dave Becky's personal involvement in trying to hush up. So Dave Becky's not playing the Cohen role, right?
Yeah.
He's not.
Yeah.
They're not paying people off.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, there's no actual overt threat being done. I got to say, where we have a devil, and we might be killing one of our three talking points here, is... I don't know if we have a devil here.
Yeah, I would say it's inconclusive.
I would say yes. And from a legal standpoint, probably not, because for all intents and purposes, it is his job to cover up for his client, to back him up. That's literally his job. But from a moral standpoint, he's not going to leave. If, say, Absolute Oil, Power Corrupts, he's in power. He's going to do it. If he's got a shot at doing it, I say he's going to do it. And I think it's a safe assumption that given the position that he's in, he's got motive, he's got opportunity, and I have no reason to think that he wouldn't do
it. I mean,
that.
If anybody's the devil here, it's not Dave Becky. If anybody's the devil here, it's Louis C.K. And this kink, this thing that he which is masturbating in front of people with questionable consent and volition situations, that was hot to him.
And
that
lever-
was his that was his kink. That's what he got off on. And so, you know, I would say, I mean, it goes back to him.
Also, can we, the big elephant in the room is, he's Louis C.K. So no matter how ugly he is, he's still famous. There are probably plenty of women out there willing to fully consensually watch him masturbate. In fact, there are women he could pay to watch him masturbate. So none of these things should be even coming up. So I think he's the devil. I think David Becky's the devil. I think they're all the devil. And, you know, they have motive, they have opportunity. And I think what he's getting off on is doing it to people who can't, who aren't giving him consent.
Right.
Yeah.
And then one thing I'll say, as an attorney who sues for quid pro quo and hostile environment, I never get a harasser on his first day.
Mm.
I never get a harasser in his first rodeo. You know, anyone who's done this, it's because they've been in power for a while,
yeah,
and they've gotten away with it for a while and have done it for a while. And I, you know, that there are five that he copped to, or I guess six
that came out.
Yeah. You know, that there are these people, that he copped to, you know, if I had to handicap the number, I'd say it's at least three times the amount. It could be more. And, you know, some of them may have had mixed volition. Some of them might have wanted to have sex with him. And he was like, yeah, no, just get over there and look
just at me. Just get over there.
Just look upset in the corner. And, okay, that's good. That's good.
That's what they're...
No, but... so I think... Clearly, he's tried to do this before. In fact, one of the things that we found that I found out going through this stuff is in an interview. So he did apologize. He did actually apologize, okay. Not just the statement that he released, but he apologized to at least two of them. Yeah. And in one of the apologies that he did, so he did personal apologies to them closer to the time. In one of the apologies, he says, I'm sorry for throwing you in the bathroom. And she's like, you didn't do that to me.
Oh, no.
So she's like, who the fuck did he throw into the bathroom? The throwing into the bathroom thing.
He's doing it so much, he's mixing them up.
Right.
He's mixing them up.
Right. So I mean, I had this one case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had this one case where this guy, it was a trading thing. In like Asia, and the boss purposefully, you know, he knew that she had been fired 2 weeks before they told her.
Okay.
He purposefully left an email trail saying, it's your call. I'm not going to weigh in on this. You guys make the decision, blah, blah, blah. So he, in email, very conspicuously, when no one asked him about it, left an email trail saying, I'm not going to take part in this decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so she had already been fired the Friday before they tell her.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to tell her on Monday. He knows they're going to tell her on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
The Friday before they tell her, he takes her out and he propositions her.
What?
So it has the weight of quid pro quo. It's this is my boss. This is my big boss. This is my boss's boss. He wants to sleep with me. What if I say no? And then she says no. And they fire her on Monday.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So because the cart is before the horse, because they already made the decision to fire her,
it doesn't
that was just creepy bullshit.
That is so it's not many levels
technically
creepy.
Quid pro quo.
Yeah.
He didn't stumble upon that scam right away. Louis C.K. didn't first start jerking off and go, I wish, you know, this would be better if someone was in the room with me looking disapprovingly.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that he figured out
over
the years. And there's probably a lot of, you know.
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot of women. There's a lot of befuddled women who took part in helping him develop this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of like a larger part of the culture that is coming out now. Like, we even saw it in like Brett Kavanaugh, is that for so long, like, getting to sexually harass women was like part of the perks of becoming like a wealthy, powerful, especially white guy. It was like, how dare you say that I can't do this anymore? Like, why else did I work so hard to become wealthy and powerful if I don't get
the
to like...
The casting couch is a term that's like 40 years old.
Exactly.
Well, not just that, but I've run into this, honestly, at the park. I'll tell you, this will ramp up the creep level like 1,000,000%. So I'm at the park with children and, you know, the kids are all pretending cops, robbers. I want to be this. I want to be that. I want to be a doctor. I want to be this. And I hear a mom saying to her son, hey, you want to be a lawyer or an engineer? Or she starts naming all these like different professions because that's how you'll get girls.
Yeah.
And that's what we tell our sons as women and how internalized.
I just
want to
say
normalized.
It's not true.
But that's, you know, I've overheard mothers telling their sons that.
I am single.
That. I've overheard.
Anybody out there who likes short, overweight Colombian dudes?
If you like that, he's fully into consent.
I'll ask.
But that is what.
Before I do something
I mean,
creepy.
We have to look at ourselves as a society.
Yeah.
And, you know, remember what we were told growing up.
Yeah.
Men are told that the pathway to pussy, so to speak, is getting a good job, making a lot of money, and pussy will come. But they never, you know, give you any details as to how that'll happen.
Yeah.
But there's this idea inherent in male psychology that, you know, the denominator of success is no matter what you look like, no matter what you act like, if you have money and you're successful in these ways, you will get married to you're owed a beautiful woman. In fact, all of Las Vegas is based on that entire presumption. Like, I remember the first time I went to Vegas, how many times I was propositioned. And when I say I was propositioned, I was not like looking cute or anything. I was
it like a Robert Redford dude, like $1,000,000 for a night?
No, for those who don't know me, I really love poker. So I was actually there for the National Association for Broadcasters Conference. So this was like nerd, you know, it was just nerd city. And I was playing poker. And I came down from my hotel room in like sweats to play poker with a bunch of guys. And I'm starting to get, and immediately I started getting propositioned. And the first guy who propositioned me was just like, hey, you know, he's just kind of like chatting me up and stuff like that. But immediately the conversation goes to, like, I told him I was interested in hanging out with him. And he starts telling me the things he's going to buy me as if that was on the table. And I'm just like, no. But with women, you're taught the opposite, that, you know, doesn't matter what you do, how funny, how successful you are, but basically your key to success is your looks.
Yeah, you got to be hot.
Yeah.
So we have to really kind of look at ourselves as a society as how we kind of set up these things.
Yeah.
Because at Louis C.K.'s level, you know, he should be able to, for all intents and purposes, get plenty of women who think he's funny, smart, handsome, or whatever.
Sure.
But he's not into that. He's into, and I've noticed this a lot, especially like on like online forums.
He's into doing it without consent.
Yes.
It's a power thing.
Yeah.
It's a power thing, totally. Have you guys heard of the incel movement?
Yes. Which is part of this too. It's like feeling owed sex.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, let me. Yeah. Oh, it's these fucking gamer kids who are like...
Well, there's a huge...
I'm being shortchanged sex.
Well, no. Well, if you look at terrorism, like American homegrown terrorism...
Yeah, there's at least a few of them that have
There's at least a few of them who are part of the incel movement. These guys that... the Unabomber died a virgin. Or no, he didn't die.
Yeah.
But he went to jail like a virgin. And in one of his letters to his brother, he asks, you know, because he kept writing, he still used like snail mail.
That's why prostitution has to be legal.
I don't know if that's necessarily, or we could just tell guys that they're not owed pussy.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah,
hey, that, you that want would pussy, be the learn first how to start. Talk to
yeah,
women.
Exactly. But I mean, it's not even the gamer kids. Like the Proud Boys just like marched on Upper East Side, New York, and they're the same thing. They're just on a different rapper. But like to bring it all back is like that. There's this idea of like you. That it was owed to you, and that's where the power.
That sex isn't something that you earn or that you like, you know, decide to have with another person. Yeah. It's like, oh wait, I get this. Why don't I have sex?
That's one of the. That's honestly like one of the biggest differences between a good person and a bad person, and it's that life doesn't owe you shit.
Yeah,
life doesn't owe you anything.
No,
you know, and most of the great things are things that, you know, are super delicate and have to be nurtured and have to be tended to. And any number of life shit can take them away from you. And, you know, you have to be good with that, you know. And it's just entitlement is going to be a big theme in most of the people who are excommunicated here that we talk about. So I guess I'm, you know, we're split. On the issue of consorting with the devil via his connection and standing by while Dave Becky does this. Again, Gaius and I didn't necessarily see where Dave Becky was involved in something conclusively untoward.
But I do think it was fair for the women to assume it was a threat from their
sure.
end. But it's just like you can't. Like,
you can't prove it legally.
Sure, I just.
Well, we all know this probably what happened.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go to the second issue, and that's a lot of people have a big issue with his apology.
So actually, we have this apology.
I'm gonna go ahead and read the apology. Okay. So a lot of people think that the apology fell short or was disingenuous.
Well, how about we read it first and we'll let the crowd.
So, so this is the statement that he read. I want to address the stories told to the New York Times by five women named Abby, Rebecca, Dana, Julia, who felt able to name themselves, and one who did not. These stories are true. At the time, I said to myself that what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my dick without asking first, which is also true. But what I learned later in life, too late, is that when you have power over another person, asking them to look at your dick isn't a question. It's a predicament for them. The power I had over these women is that they admired me, and I wielded that power irresponsibly. I have been remorseful of my actions, and I've tried to learn from them and run from them. Now I'm aware of the extent of the impact of my actions. I learned yesterday the extent to which I left these women who admired me feeling badly about themselves and cautious around other men who would have never put them in that position. I also took advantage of the fact that I was widely admired in my community, which disabled them from sharing their story and brought hardship to them when they had tried, because people who look up to me didn't want to hear it. I didn't think that I was doing any of that because my position allowed me not to think about it. There is nothing about this that I forgive myself for, and I have to reconcile it with who I am, which is nothing compared to the task I left them with. I wish I had reacted to their admiration of me by being a good example to them as a man and given them some guidance as a comedian. The hardest regret I have to live with is what you've done to hurt someone else. And I can hardly wrap my head around the scope of the hurt I brought to them. I'd be remiss to exclude the hurt I've brought on people who I work with and have worked with, whose professional and personal lives have been impacted by all of this, including projects currently in production, the cast and crew of Better Things, Baskets, Cops, One Mississippi, and I love you, Daddy. I deeply regret that this has brought negative attention to my manager, Dave Becky, who only tried to mediate a situation that I caused. I've brought anguish and hardship to the people at FX who have given me so much, The Orchard, who took a chance on my movie, and every other entity that has bet on me through the years. I've brought pain to my family, my friends, my children, and their mother. I've spent my long, lucky career talking and saying anything I want. I will now step back and take a long time to listen. Thank you for reading.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one thing that, so I guess one of the things that we have to do is place it in a context, mm-hmm. right? And so in the context that it was in, this was the first apology that wasn't terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so
the bar was low.
The bar was incredibly low. And so rather than say, I was drunk, I didn't remember it. Mm-hmm. Hello, Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. Rather than say, I was drunk, I didn't remember it. Or it was the 70s, everybody was doing it. Or yeah. or they wanted it. Or just straight up saying, these women are liars.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He took this conversation to a second place, which is, everything they said is true. Mm-hmm. Okay? So one of the things that we talk that we want to talk about in terms of redemption is honesty.
Yeah.
It shouldn't surprise us that a comedian who is, I guess, prized for his honesty.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
His ugly honesty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That made us laugh at ourselves at the uncomfortableness of being human. And that honesty that he was able to go to in his comedy. So his apology was brutally honest.
Yeah.
Were things I could do better if I was writing it for him.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, when I first read it, when he first released that apology, I had a hard time wrapping my head around why certain people felt so strongly that it wasn't enough. Or like that it was like that they still had such a negative reading of that apology. Because to me, when I read it, like I said, like the bar was low, definitely. But it still seemed like one of the more like acknowledging all of the right things. And it didn't feel insincere. I mean, again, there's no like real apology that can fix what he did. But
he notes that.
Yeah. But if apologies out there, like to me, that's like what you should at least say. Like you should at least be able to bring yourself.
This has a bunch of the building level. Blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a bunch of the building blocks of it.
That should be the bare minimum and not the high bar.
And so one of the initial attacks of it was, well, sure, now that it's out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now that it's out.
Now that you have to deal with it.
Now that you have to deal with it, you come and say something amazing. You should have done that beforehand. This charge is the second charge. This is bearing false witness, which in the olden days just meant straight up lying. And so, you know, the one attack on this is that this is disingenuous, because if you really felt this way, if you really were in this much turmoil, mm-hmm. if you really did understand how these women felt, mm-hmm. why are we just hearing about this now? You know?
I mean, what was the alternative? That he out himself and say, hey, I'd like to make an announcement.
Yeah.
I sexually assaulted all these women on this. That would be great.
That would be more honest.
That would be great.
Yeah.
But
it's not really how any humans work.
But I think one of the things that the Me Too movement has brought out was the instances of sexual assault that honestly, like a lot of men didn't realize they were even doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think a lot of you guys didn't realize how much how douchey you are just overall. Yeah. Just as a gender.
Yes.
Just
misogyny is just a blind spot for men. We don't see it.
You like, don't see it hard. At all. I mean, like the things I used to complain about, like just how much street harassment I would get on my way to and from work on a daily basis. Most of the men in my life who love me, who care about me, couldn't even process it. Much less, and it wasn't even a question of just like straight up believing me or not believing me. I think we just live in different worlds.
Sure.
And I think with all of what all of these stories coming out has kind of shown men is how terrible you guys are. Like, even from like the Aziz Ansari thing, as far as just like just being a really bad date and being just generally rude and uncouth to, you know, what most guys identify as rape, which is the traditional like guy in the bushes coming out and, and violently assaulting someone. That is most men's idea of sexual assault. And there's this entire gray area of reality that women live in that I think guys are only just kind of now being aware of.
I
don't think he thought he did anything
I agree. Because I think it goes back to your point, too, of like, it's not even just men. I think this country in general has a very bad concept of what constitutes consent, what constitutes assault, which is why you still have women who are like, oh, Trump, that's just locker room talk. Kavanaugh, he did nothing wrong. Like, what 70-year-old boy hasn't done that? So it's like we're at this place in our country where a few of us have started figuring out and like retroactively trying to go back and correct these, you know, decades old sins. And everyone else is still stuck in their, you know, previous mode of thinking where...
I mean, one of the first things he opens up with is, I thought what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my dick without asking first. Because in his mind, he decided that, well, because you didn't actually see my dick. It wasn't an offensive dick.
But well, I asked. You knew it was coming.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew my dick is probably going to come out right now. And however, he took volition from those two women. When he, if this is true, and he hasn't made a statement about this exactly, you know, even though he said blanket, everything they say is true, he closed the door. So he did ask. They didn't say no. So this whole idea of they didn't say no.
Yeah. But even understanding power dynamics.
Right.
You know, I personally thought it was, the apology was a good start. And one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, even when we were discussing the premise of this show, was just this general idea that right now our country is undergoing a lot of reconstruction, spiritually, culturally, so on and so forth. And, you know, this mode of just canceling people isn't really productive if we're going to win this war. And so I think of him as somebody who I think honestly is a creep. He's a total creep. I in my last week of Louis C.K. research, he's a complete creep. But I also don't think he necessarily wants to be a bad person. So he seems like the ideal person that would be up for reform. Yeah. Like, I think he needs to go to, like, you know, some sort of like rehabilitation center run by lesbians and, you know, basically everyone he's offended, women, queer people, just like anyone who he's had privilege over, and just, you know, go through like a reprogramming center, if one so existed.
Yeah.
To kind of be like, hey, listen, that little bubble that you live in, the world's a lot bigger than that, and you're hurting a lot of people. And I think he's one of those people whose lack of self-esteem, fundamental lack of self-esteem, I think he didn't think he was hurting anyone.
Yeah.
I really don't believe he thought he was hurting anyone.
I think it's also, like, for those, like, someone like me who has followed him for a while and, like, knows his actual comedy and watched his show, it was not surprising when it came out, but it was kind of hard to jive with the idea that, like, he was one of the few white comedians that, like, exclusively talked about his privilege
constantly.
Except when it came to misogyny.
Yeah, the misogyny was still his blind spot, apparently. But, and it was, I guess, kind of eye-opening in a way in seeing that, like, he could see some of these things around him and call them out in himself. But then he's doing this other thing in his, like, personal private life that was, you know, to us, so obviously also wrong, but like you said, he could see everything except for the misogyny. So,
but I think one of the reasons why that is because, you know, racially, even though we're still a very backwards country, like racially, we still talk about race a lot more than we talk about sexual assault.
Definitely.
Sexual assault is one of those things that really hasn't gotten the attention that it deserves up until like the last year.
Yeah. It's very
and
true.
So I think that's why a lot of those things are coming up. But now what do we do with it? What do we do with everything coming to light? How do we make that allow us to build a better society where people aren't assaulting other people?
Yeah.
I think there was a comedian, now that I'm thinking about it, and what Gaius was saying was about checking his privilege. I think there's, ironically, and this may be ironic or not, ironically, Dave Chappelle is probably the only male comedian that I know of who has checked his privilege in terms of sexual assault on women. He did in his last two, of the last two, he said, you know, one time, like, I was working for these drug dealers doing blah, 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 this, that, and the other.
That was a great
And they gave me $10,000. And it's, he's like, for the first time in my life, while I'm on the train with $10,000, I could get jacked for $10,000. For the first time in my life, I felt what it was like to be a woman. You guys have to have that pussy with you all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, trying to take it.
I just had to get home. Yeah, yeah. I just had to get. But like on that train, I was like, who's going to try and take this? Who's going to try and take this? And so that was a masterful attempt at explaining what it's like to be a target of sexual violence.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, that's an illustration. No one has, obviously I've been a feminist forever. But the idea that mundane fear, that constant fear, right, of having something that if you're on a train car with not a lot of people, having something that can make you, you know, a victim on you at all times, like that's, you know, that made it hit home. And yet he is, the part that makes it ironic is, Chappelle called the phone person, who we know her name. I'm not going to look it up. But the person who he masturbated with on the phone.
Sold her shit a brittle spirit?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And that's
so we'll get to Dave Chappelle some point. We'll get to Dave Chappelle when we're going to the marginal cases of people who have been half canceled.
Half canceled, yeah.
But the brittle spirit. Let's talk about brittle spirit.
Yeah.
I remember listening to that and thinking that was funny. And I'll say, and I'm going to preface that I thought it was funny because I think that was a joke that I think I feel like a lot of black women might have found that funny.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you, I've been guilty of it. And in my black women circles, this is something we've definitely discussed and talked about, especially when the Aziz Ansari thing came out, where we've been kind of jokingly laughing at like white women's accounts of sexual assault versus black women's accounts of sexual assault. And it's just kind of like, so that guy showed you his penis, but this guy did all these other things. And, you know, and one of the women I talked to, she brought up, she's actually a comedian. She said, you know, we really have to watch ourselves with doing that because it feels like we've become so hardened, you know, with our histories of assault that like we're now like condemning other women for theirs not being bad enough and we can't get into that game.
Right.
Yeah.
However, I think something that has been getting brought up lately is how white women have kind of hijacked the Me Too movement, which actually was started by a black woman. And one of the things that has been kind of talked about, but mostly in women's circles amongst women, has been this idea of like the women that are kind of playing into the quid pro quo.
The women who are writing that Aziz Ansari article.
Well, not so much that, but it's kind of like...
I'm just saying, listen, what...
It's like, okay, so if we're going to be playing this game of trading pussy for jobs or trading pussy for... Yeah.
Like the Melania Trumps of the world
make it really hard for everybody else. Yeah. Because they're kind of playing into it. It's just like, these guys might stop asking us for shit, you know, quid pro quo, if people stop giving it to them.
Yeah.
And... I think one of the things that has been coming up that's been really difficult to talk about in a public forum, you know, especially as a woman, and I feel terrible even saying this, but it's something that I've been struggling with a lot, has been this idea that some of these women are coming out because they were playing a game of quid pro quo. They didn't get what they wanted, and that's the reason why they're coming out.
Buyer's remorse.
Yeah, and that isn't cool either. And it's, again, one of those things that I feel like is muddying the waters as far as the movement, because there is rampant sexual assault, rampant in the patriarchy.
I mean, you know, the waters, especially where sexual politics are concerned, mm-hmm. you know, the waters are muddy.
Yeah. Very.
They're always going to be muddy. They're always going to be cloudy. And there's always going to be people taking advantage on one side or the other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm finding my own predilection towards saying, hey, you're muddying the waters here. Hey, you're crying wolf. You know, you're crying wolf when there are people who have real allegations. And I find myself saying, all right, you know what?
But when we start getting into the game of real allegations versus fake allegations.
Right.
Then everything gets fucked up.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Exactly. You don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
You don't want to say anything because, you know, I have friends of mine, I have colleagues, I have mentors who've been Me Too'd, so to speak, you know, and some of them, yeah, you know, there's people that I know that are predators. I'm so glad that they've been outed. And then there's other people that I feel like kind of got swept up in the whole thing. And, you know, essentially women were looking for favors. You know, they were trading sex for favors. Got mad when
they knew what they were getting into.
They knew what they were getting into.
Assumption of risk.
That was kind of, and that's the problem with sexual politics, because then the system is the issue. The system that allows for that to happen.
Sure.
So I don't want to sit there and single those women out and be like, those are bad women or anything like that. Yeah. But I want to.
They shouldn't have had to play that game.
They shouldn't have had to play that game.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, some people are better at it than. So I'm not going to sit there and
some people have ill-gotten gains.
Yeah.
Through playing that game. But they're victims too.
They're victims as well. You know, so
just less, I mean, less sympathetic.
Yeah.
Well, now it's just like, how do we now it becomes, you know, how do we leverage this? How do we leverage that? And then it messes up the entire thing.
So, I mean, I guess I want to draw, you know, we went on a few tangents. We all feel that this, I mean, do we feel like this has the good building blocks?
Yeah.
Of an apology?
Yes.
I'll work with it, yeah. Yeah. As far as apologies go, you know, sure.
Yeah.
I think this would be, I mean, we could probably use this as a measurement because everybody that we talk about is going to at some point have an apology. And so we'll just...
And I think an apology is a good way to start.
We'll make this the baseline.
Other people aren't
apologies. Yeah. Yeah, I would agree this should be the baseline.
Did you at least get to a CK?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you get to that?
CK is the minimum.
Yeah.
You got Me Too'd out there. This is the minimum,
which is you fess, you explain that you have delved into trying to sympathize with your victims,
yeah.
trying to put yourself in their shoes, yeah. and trying to see where their pain is,
yeah.
see what their pain is, and see what your fault is in creating that pain. So he did do that. He did do both of those things. Obviously, the thing that made him do this, right, is still there. Okay,
yes.
So that he gets it, that he understands, it doesn't make it right.
Yeah,
doesn't make it right.
But now we can start the conversations about redemption, and that's where I want to get to.
All right.
Is I think that there are I think there's real predators out there. I think so the system is set up to protect
this. Dovetails perfectly. Mm-hmm. Number three, failure to be about shit. He was the woke white comic. Mm-hmm. He was the honest comic.
Yeah.
He was the feminist comic, the comic who knew his own privilege, white male comic.
But
by the way, he's Latino.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know.
Because his real
You're
last name.
Him
now? No, his real last name is Louis C.K.
Well, are you serious?
Yeah. Secondly.
Yeah, second.
Louis. I did not know
yeah.
that.
Luis.
Yeah.
No, he
I think you should have kept that.
He didn't speak. He didn't speak English until he was 7 years old.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
But he's got Hungarian parents. His grandfather emigrated to Mexico, so his father speaks. And in several of his works, he's had people play his father,
mm-hmm.
and the people who play his father are all Latino actors.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because his dad has not a Hungarian accent. His dad has a Mexican accent.
So he grew up. Passing?
Well, he's ethnically Hungarian.
Yeah.
Hmm. Although he grew up in a Mexican household. From 0 to 7, he grew up in a Mexican household. his dad was basically a Mexican dude of Hungarian descent.
Yeah. Interesting.
So,
still guilty.
Well, listen, Latinos are big sexual predator. Yeah. There's a lot of sexual predator. A lot of machismo.
Is this where we're going now?
Machista culture is about, you know, you take them. The Latin lower thing, where you just grab a woman and make out with her, and even though she resists you, and then eventually she gets weak in your arms because of the, the force of your...
their sexual assault.
So, so the third charge here, failure to be about shit, is, was all that shit that you were, was all that honesty and wokeness and checking your own privilege, was all of that bullshit when you were able to, and I'm going to break it down. I mean, is he a sexual predator or is he a creepy guy who fucked up?
Why not both?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's...
I think the difference is where charge is pressed.
And then, and I'll get into it. So the first thing, we talked about this. You know there had to be more than five. Yeah. The second thing, the thing that he did on the pilot... and on the Chris Rock show, him being a writer and him being one of the name stars when a nobody else was his co-star, all him asking these women to participate in this, that was quid pro quo sexual harassment.
Yeah.
Okay. Legally speaking, I can tell you, any of those two women at that time, if it was in the statute of limitations, they've been able to sue for it and they would get a decent amount of money. So he did do quid pro quo sexual harassment, okay? And whether or not he knew what he was doing, you know, bottom line is he did sexually profit on his power.
Yeah.
The other thing, what the phone thing is an extremely creepy thing to do. It's not necessarily illegal. I know in New York State, that would be... intentional maybe. Infliction of emotional distress. I wouldn't take the case, but I could see some other struggling attorneys taking the case and trying to make it intentional infliction of emotional distress.
So you mean by taking the case, you mean representing the women?
Yes.
Yeah, representing the woman on the phone, the brittle spirit woman. that what he subjected her to was... And the test of this is whether it's outrageous. Do you know what the test of outrageous is?
What?
This is actually true. A judge wrote, well, outrageous, judicially speaking, outrageous is the kind of thing that if someone tells you that they did it, you would exclaim loudly, outrageous.
That's the precedent.
That's the test. That's the worst test in all of law.
Yeah.
Is it outrageous to jack off on the phone with somebody that you didn't tell them you were going to jack off? I think it's outrageous. I wouldn't.
I feel like most men wouldn't find that outrageous.
But I would find that pretty outrageous.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. I don't know if I would exclaim loudly outrageous if someone told me.
It's not nutrageous. Unless he does finish, then it's nutrageous. Heyo. So maybe I take the case. It might be big enough. Not him, clearly not. But you know the settlement. And what he did in Toronto, that is a degree of sexual assault.
Yeah.
That's sexual assault.
Yeah, actually blocking someone from...
When he blocked the door. Yes, that is, yeah. When he blocked the door, that became sexual assault.
So what is the charge?
Is he a sexual predator or is he just a creepy dude?
No, he's a sexual predator.
He's a sexual predator. I was on the fence at first until I watched that movie, I Love You, Daddy. Have you guys seen it?
Tell us about it. No, I haven't seen that movie.
Okay, so...
So you are the non... So you are the non-Louis C.K.,
fan, but
you are sandwiched like the bread of this sandwich. Yeah. It are like Louis C.K. I've been a fan for a long time.
Now, keep in mind, I am
and
a huge
you actually
fan.
Watched that movie.
I watched the movie, And just for full disclosure, just to give a little context as to my positionality, I have a huge soft spot for comedians as artists, primarily because they generally have to operate within a degree of honesty that, you know,
no other profession
requires. I'm a photographer. You know, I'm behind the camera most of the time. I don't have to do work that put so much of my personal life and my personal thoughts out on display, you know, in such a vulnerable way. So I have a soft spot for comedians because they have to kind of put it all out there and kind of cross the line to know where the line is. And it's a very precarious situation to be in as an artist. So I'm just going to
They're often martyrs.
They're often martyrs because, you know, you don't know what the line is until you cross it, essentially. That being said, that movie creeped me the fuck out. Because someone told me that, like, oh, yeah, it reminds me of Woody Allen. I'm like, who's also a sexual predator. So just a little bit about the movie.
I don't think it's accidental.
It's not. So the movie is about Louis C.K. He's playing kind of himself as a writer who has a daughter who's 17 years old, who's recently come to live with him. He's estranged from the mom. And
I feel like I should articulate that at some point, like when I make, like, you know, that gif of Michael Scott making that yeesh face.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as soon as you went, he's got a daughter. She's 17. I went, yeah. Yeesh face. Yeah. I'm just going to start saying yeesh face.
Because my early introduction into Louis C.K. was actually him talking about his family and his kids and everything like that.
And saying, so, like, his daughters are dicks.
Yeah. So,
like, she's such a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Things like that. So now, you know, in this movie, he's like, he's got this daughter that he just can't say no to. It's his little princess, so on and so forth. Lo and behold, she yeesh starts face. Hanging out with this older guy played by John Malkovich, who is known for yeesh liking face. Younger women. Yeah. And in fact, when he takes his daughter to this Hollywood party where
yeesh
they
race!
See him, they see John Malkovich's character. And the first thing his daughter's character says is, ew, isn't it that guy who's a pedophile? And the first thing he does is he apologizes for him because the guy also happens to be his literary hero. And he starts defending him to his own daughter.
Who calls him out first?
Who calls? So the daughter
like
calls it out
start
first.
A second podcast where we watch this and comment this movie, along with it.
This movie is cringe moment after cringe moment after Yeesh cringe
face.
Moment. So Andy and I are talking about the movie afterwards, and we're kind of just analyzing it. And one of the things, one of the subplots to the movie is his own relationship with this other actress who is, I wouldn't say inappropriately younger, but she's a lot more attractive than he is. So I don't know exactly what their ages are, but it was the textbook older kind of not good looking director type guy and young actress. But she's clearly an adult, but she's a lot younger than him. And him trying to keep his daughter from getting into a relationship with this older, much older, like 80-year-old pedophile.
With fucking Malkovich.
With Malkovich.
Yeesh face.
So, and I forgot what the name of the actress is, but she was the girl in, what was that movie? Kick-Ass?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she's,
Grace Moretz is her last
yes,
name.
Yes.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yeah, or something. But we'll,
that
we'll
I know
that
it
out.
Is yeesh face.
So anyway, the entire thing is kind of a foil between his relationship, Louis C.K.'s relationship with the inappropriately younger actress, mirrored by his daughter's relationship.
Yeah, he's getting a taste of his
own medicine. He's getting a taste of his own medicine. So now he's,
which obviously is like autobiographical because he's been a creep.
He's been that guy. Yeah.
He's
and
been
now
that guy.
He doesn't feel like he can tell
and now
his
kids,
daughter.
I mean, his daughters
his
are
that age
now.
Yeah, so now he's got to deal with the fact that now he's in that position where now he has daughters that are about to go through the same bullshit.
Deal with men like him.
I think this is an important movie.
This is a very important movie. So, so for me to be watching this movie, preparing for this show, knowing that
I'm sorry,
he's
I didn't watch
under,
it. How did you watch it?
How did I watch it? Or
yeah, well, on what service?
Oh, I can't. I can't disclose that.
Okay.
I can't disclose
would you be
that.
Incriminating we'll yourself?
I plead the fifth on that one. Okay. But the movie was seen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Anyway, long story short, the first thought I had about this movie was ew. The second thought I had about this movie, putting in the context of all the sexual assault allegations, was, wow, this is surprisingly honest. And, you know, like it felt like he was doing a lot of self-reflection in regards to his own. He was positioning himself as a creep.
I mean, that's the thing.
Honestly, I mean, that's why we have a struggle with it, because
he's so honest.
Yeah.
And when it actually can
incriminate himself, he does it like through his work.
Exposes that, you know, hey, look, honest is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great that you're honest. Yeah, that's great that you confess.
Yeah.
But if you're not, you know,
doing the work in your own actual life,
you got to do the motherfucking work.
Yeah. You got to do the work. But when I'm also thinking it from like a much bigger picture kind of situation, is that, you know, a lot of people don't want to get caught out there for not just sexual assault, but sex-related crimes in general, because there's this idea that once you've been branded, there's no way out.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that's where a lot of the, and I think it's retarded, but a lot of the, oh, you know, our sons are going to be falsely accused, or his fear of being falsely accused is becoming so much more prevalent, because it's one of those things that, even though it never happens, like that someone's falsely accused, their life is, it doesn't really happen. That's not a real thing. You know, but if we can kind of create this, hey, you can be a better person. You can come back from this. Maybe more people would be willing to kind of acknowledge what they've done and
seek
try
help
to,
for it.
And seek help for it. And
because, not hide these dark intentions and not hide these things. Talk about them. And then maybe that blunts the impact of them.
Because
their
I do
lives.
Think he's a sexual predator. I also think he is a creepy guy who fucked up. I think he's both.
Yeah, I think both.
I don't think anyone should be like is he a workplace hazard? Yes. Yeah.
So
yes.
I mean that's the next issue. So
but one of the things that came up in the movie was I don't think he was this idea that I don't think he knows how to not be a creep.
So that's the next issue. The next issue is was if this apology was honest.
Mm-hmm.
If this apology was honest, then being about shit would be, he said, I'm going to go away for a long while and listen. I'm going to go away for a long while and listen.
Yeah.
Now, he went away for 9 months. Is 9 months, was he full of shit when he said, I'm going to go away for a long while? Is 9 months a long while?
I don't think he was full of shit when he said it, but I do think 9 months is too short. In an ideal world, he would be able to go back in front of a mic when those five women decide he can go back in front of a mic.
Like, so is it majority or is it?
I think it
like
has to be a five. Unanimous decision of all five.
Then we have to get more than just a five.
But I understand. Doesn't the comedy club kind of like not eat their own, but they kind of self regulate and so
exactly.
far
and I,
he
so
went
I,
on stage, they're like, boo, and now he's back.
No, yeah, and that's the thing.
That's the thing.
So it's been reported as there were boos. There were three or four people who went and talked to management and said that they wanted their money back, or they were upset, or they feel like they were that this was foisted upon them.
Yeah,
it is widely now reported that there were not boos.
Yeah,
and that he was applauded, and he went back out this last week
because Comedy Cellar is like his home base. Like that's the thing that people don't grasp either is like he went to the place he felt most safe and comfortable.
That's why in the intro I called him Louis C.K. I try to think about like where is so Kanye is from Chicago. We knew that. That's why we did Kanye of Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like of the what would Louis C.K. be of the? He was born in Mexico, but he's not of Mexico. Mm. He was raised out in Boston, but he's not a Boston guy. He doesn't even have the Boston accent. It's not like, you know, I mean, I'm sure some people in Boston claim him, but that's cool. Yeah. He fucking thinks they're idiots. And he said so in his comedy. But in his show, when he had to make an intro.
Yeah, he walks into the Comedy Cellar.
Where
that's how
he
the
had to go home.
Yeah.
Like where home was and where he went to first after those 9 months were over. That was the Cellar. And like the Cellar is this place that
it's his safe place.
Is his safe place, and that's why he went there at the end of 9 months.
Yeah.
And the management at the Cellar said, listen, I'm not banning him for life. you know, I weighed this. I talked to a lot of women comedians. He says he talked to a lot of women. And by the way, there's a lot of women comedians at the Cellar who kill. Yeah. Amy Schumer's, you know, frequents there. Lynn Coblitz. Just like some, like, badass women, you know, are at the Cellar.
Yeah. We encourage you to go to the Cellar.
Go to
if you're
the
in
cellar.
New York, go to the Cellar. To the Cellar. It's great
now,
comedy.
Or don't, so I can get in. I think he should go there. But I'm looking at it from an artistic standpoint because I think art is how a lot of people process things.
Yeah.
So now my cutoff line is I don't think he should make money off of it. See,
well,
can
so,
he go
yeah.
up in front of... I think he should be able to be allowed to go up in front of a mic because I think that if we want him to actually be about shit, we want him to improve... I think that is part of the process.
So
a lot of comedians need to talk about it.
That's the other issue.
But I don't think he should be making money off of it.
Yeah.
That's the other issue in this part that we discussed. And we'll go back to the nine-month issue because we haven't
Because I don't think going up on the mic is like a fun thing because people
are
laughing.
The issue. It's been reported that this week he actually, for the first time, because he went back a few months ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this week he now has a section in his act about what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the little bit in his bit about it that's been taken out and put all over clickbait articles was, I lost $35 million in 1 hour.
Yeah.
Right? And then, so people who weren't at the show put that up and underneath wrote, that how dare he bitch about losing $35 million in 1 hour when these women have to deal with being victims of sexual assault and blah, blah, blah. And the fact of the matter is, when you actually read the interviews about people who were there, he wasn't saying...
Yeah.
He wasn't saying that. And he didn't say it. And it's taken out of context. The female comedian who announced him the other day... at a comedy club in the West Side, Amare Costello said of his act, it's like he didn't even skip a beat with the year he had. Costello said he was so genuine and reflected on how weird his year was. Tried out some new dark and dirty material. Sounds to me he's owning up and acknowledging and trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so this is a female comedian
mm-hmm.
who, I mean, these are the victims.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the victims are females in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is why I said, in an ideal world, it would be females.
Which is why I said, in an ideal world, women in the industry.
I prefer
these are,
women.
These
in
are
an ideal
women
world,
in the industry.
It would be the actual women he assaulted, not tangential women
sure.
who get to like throw on that title as well.
Just whenever we feel.
Like. So Gaius wants an actual like jury,
a tribunal
jury of,
sorts, of yeah.
his like.
Yeah.
Jury of his victims
yeah.
up there. Because giving...
I honestly believe, like, having read what most of these women, like, even the two, I don't think they would necessarily want him to stay out of comedy forever either.
No, and they've said that they don't think he should never work again.
Yeah, so I think it's just like, you know, if they're the aggrieved, they should be able to weigh in. Like, I feel like it's kind of a lot for any of us to be like, what's too long or too short?
Yeah, we're not. I mean, I'm personally not in that world, but all joking aside, the idea of some sort of cultural tribunal isn't that bad of an idea for communities like that.
Yeah.
I think that it's important for women to have spaces like that where we can talk to each other and kind of protect each other, but also kind of make collective like decisions. I don't know what that would look like, but I know, did you ever hear about that blacklist, the Hollywood blacklist that was going around? It was like an Excel spreadsheet of, and actually the woman I think is now getting sued for that sheet, but it was a list of Hollywood men and things that they've done. And it was going around to other women. And it was a very unofficial document.
Mm-hmm. They did that shit.
What?
Whatever they said on the
they
list,
did that
they
shit.
Did
oh
that
no,
shit.
No, they did. But what I'm saying is that she's getting sued right now. But that's a
sure.
that's a sidebar. But I think things like that. I think women as a collective. I think that's good for us to do. To I don't know how that would be made official. That's more your.
I mean, you know, there's a listen. I think we're in a correction. Just like, you know, when the economy goes flat for like when it just busts and it loses like 10 or 15% or whatever it is. There's a correction. It's a correction. We all have to recalibrate. Yes. I grew up hearing that, you know, that you have to kiss a girl, you have to go in for it, and you don't ask. And now,
and as women, we're always told to play hard to get, not be too easy, which then encourages you to be more rapey.
Yeah, no, yeah. I have to be more rapey.
It's everyone said you're set up to rape. We're set up to get raped. Yeah. It's not a good system for anybody involved.
Yeah. And I grew up with the idea that, all right, well, you have to like put it out there. You have to try. Mm-hmm. And I grew up thinking, no, thank you. I really don't want to. Yeah. And so I've been a big proponent of the halfway kiss.
Mm. What's the halfway kiss?
The halfway, well, you where you kiss like right here, like right at the edge. I'm pointing at the side of my mouth. Where at the end of the date, you go to that side of the mouth, and if she gives you the ill cheek, mm-hmm. all right, you know it's over. Just like pack your shit up. You fucked up. It didn't happen. When she gives you the ill cheek, right? If you're going for the just side of the mouth, and she goes, no, stupid, come on. And she puts the middle of her mouth in the way of your side mouth aim. Then, all right.
But even the fact that we have to think that hard.
But see, just, like, that's my thing. Because I didn't want to just like grab a girl and shove my tongue. Because that's what I was instructed to do.
I would like to kiss you now and it not be a weird thing.
Yeah. Fuck that. Asking for it? No. Listen, now I've accepted that I would, that at this point in time, rather than jumping across the chasm.
Kisses should be asked for.
Oh, that's so stupid.
No.
Listen. I'm going to officially agree with you. However, I'm saying that is awful. You're just,
that's that machismo.
No, it's not even machismo. It's just, listen, I've been trained and I developed a different set of skills.
You've been trained now, by the wrong people.
And now I can't use these skills anymore.
You can't.
Not for nothing. I can't talk on the phone no more. What the fuck is that about, man? If I call,
that's just getting
that's
older.
Like close to, it's close to rape if you call a girl on the phone because like it's just too
that's
intimate.
Ridiculous.
It's
that's
too intimate.
That's ridiculous.
It's too whatever. You've got to get your text game up.
Or maybe it's more intimate.
I remember
than
back
she
in
was.
The day, you used to like kick it to a girl, and you would have these 4-hour, 2-hour, 3-hour conversations 2 or 3 times
maybe
a week.
Hanging out with the wrong girls.
No, I'm saying, but like, no. Well, listen, all of the girls my age mm-hmm. are married.
Okay.
Right? I'm 39. All the girls my age are married.
Start,
and so now I have to date
to
I have to date millennials.
You're starting to like an incel. Yeah. You're starting to sound
no,
like
no,
an
listen,
incel.
I'm doing all right. I'm not going to commit any crimes because I'm not getting laid. I'm just saying, you know, so now I have to date down a generation. I have to date millennials. And dating millennials has been a huge adjustment for me.
Because they don't want to talk on the phone?
Because they won't talk on the phone. And that was the best part of my game. Oh my God, laying down and tired. I've got this gravelly, like Bill
are
Paxton.
You, wait, what Bill
Pullman.
Kind
of just like.
What an announcement for
oh,
you.
Oh, what's up, baby? You know, I had a good fucking laying down, talking on the phone fucking voice. I can't use it anymore.
Well, boohoo.
I don't got it. Boo-hoo. And then now I've got to be like, yo, I would really like to kiss you. Like,
yeah, actually, that works best.
That works
trust
really well.
Me.
No, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Honestly, I respect a man who can own up and tell me what his intentions are verbally and in a clear way and allow me to give consent. That turns me on.
No, I don't mind asking anymore. And especially, you know, I mean, you get to this
I'm
age.
I'm glad you don't mind asking
anymore. Listen.
I'm glad you don't mind.
Listen, we're eventually going to do one of these about us. And so I invite anyone who may have a story about me to just, you know, tweet me. I just got a Twitter
handle.
Juanch, it's Juanch De. So it's J-U.
That's what I said.
I know, but the Twitter handle is at J-U-A-N-C-H-D-E.
Add him on Twitter.
And then we'll have you call in and say what I did to you.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't think you did anything to me.
I probably didn't. I'm going to tell you, like looking back in my history, yes. So I've told you about the side kiss. I've done the side kiss thing because, like, I never wanted to, like, and there's literally women who have, like, 10 years after the fact said, I was going like this. I was signaling, please kiss me. And I was like, I didn't know.
But see, as women, everything's got to change. Women, we have to be more vocal and verbal and take out this idea of, like, you know, if you're too easy, men won't like you.
Yeah.
We've got to deprogram ourselves from that. And we also have to, you know, on both genders, just deprogram on both sides. Guys need to ask, and women, we need to be more vocal about saying yes or no or giving our...
Yeah, because, I mean, what we gain from this is that... Women
giving and taking.
No, not just women, but what we get from this is gentle souls, shy people won't be subjected to, you know, things that they don't want to be a part of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that's cool. That's great. That's what we're gaining by it. Even though I think it fucking sucks. What we gain by it is that, you know, people only get down with people that they want
to
get down
with. But people would find more people to get down with. Like, I was like, if everyone is more open about what they're really into.
Mm-hmm.
So, case in point, this is way off on a tangent from our original discussion, but I was reading this article, like, kind of thinking about this at the time, talking about how what we actually watch in porn is so different than what we portray as, like, what we're into. And, like, so this guy, like, looked at, you know, what most American men look at in porn, and generally speaking, we look at a lot more bigger women.
Yes.
But yet we still have this outward
disconnect.
Idea of society.
There's a disconnect between what's in vogue.
Yeah. So if we were more
and
open
what's on
about
everybody's
what we actually
tube,
wanted, there
on
would be a lot more like
porn
bigger
hub.
Bone girls
actually,
that
what's,
don't
what's
have
really
to like
interesting.
Be left out and feel like less of a person because of like whatever their body figure is. And we do that in a lot of things. There's a lot of kinks out there that people would like Louis.
Everybody being more honest will inure to everyone's benefit.
Yeah.
Actually, what's really interesting is, and this is the thing I started doing, is after there's like some sort of major national tragedy, see what's trending on Pornhub. If you want your thumb on the pulse of the people.
Yeah.
Just what's it's trending true. On Pornhub.
Yeah.
It's just, you'd be really surprised at what America, what's on America's mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on my page, there will definitely be like some Sarah Palin stuff.
There was a lot of like I remember during like the whole Black Lives Matter thing. There was a lot of like dudes looking up white women police officers. It was I was just like really America.
Okay, no, I was there.
Really America?
I was there
really.
Too.
But yeah.
White women police officers?
I think that we generally need to be more open as a society. We need to stop judging ourselves and one another in a way that isn't really very productive and start, you know, focusing on trying to make everyone happy. Like, you know, stop giving men shit for who they choose to date or not date. Stop giving women shit for who they choose to or not fuck. Or, you know, stop giving people shit for the choices that they want to make for their own life happiness.
As long as it's two
consensual.
Right,
so we're all
as long as it's
two
consensual.
Or more consensual people.
So we're all kind of in the same place about him being a sexual predator.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also being a creepy dude who fucked up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we want him to take steps and move towards creepy dude who fucked up and stop being a predator.
And be
and
less
understand.
Creepy over time as well.
He could still, listen, creep on creeping on. Still stay creepy, but don't take away anyone else's volition.
I also think there's a big
elephant
in
the room.
Don't
abuse anyone else's.
Louis C.K. might get more consensual sex if he went to the gym ever. Just saying.
Well, no, that's not. Hey, so he went through that whole period where he actually got more buff and he was working out. So, like, I don't want to ever put it on, like,
that was probably
looks
the sweet,
either because that's like
a spouse or a girlfriend.
Yeah, but that's like a weird thing to also put on people is like to be like, oh, if you look better.
Yeah, because, are you in a body shaming?
No,
is
it's not. I'm not
doing?
Talking about body shaming. I'm just talking about the shaming? I Love You Daddy movie and how decrepit all the guys looked and how fine all the women looked.
Well,
I
mean,
that
he casted
that was weird.
It.
Yeah,
he casted it. He
and
chose.
I think that's a problem where there's
but
this
he
expectation.
Wanted, he
of
wanted
a
it
certain,
to be in the us to be in an environment of ugly people getting laid because of their
power. Yeah.
And ugly men getting laid because there ugly were no there were no ugly women in that movie.
Yeah, no, I mean yes, ugly men getting laid.
John Malkovich was the best looking man.
John Malkovich, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, John Malkovich.
Actually,
was
let's
the best
be real.
Guy, right?
He's you know he keeps up.
He does. He does. But he's, still, he's playing an 80-year-old pedophile.
No, he's the creepiest dude to ever live. Maybe Willem Dafoe is a little creepier, but like he's a creepy dude. But I get it. My mom is into John Malkovich. I'm giving way too much.
Yes.
My mom is like, I would rub his bald head. She's into that.
That's creepy. Wow. Wow.
She's into him and Michael Jordan.
So bald guy.
Bald guy.
She likes the like bald with dignity thing.
Well, anyway, back to the whole, like, sexual predator thing. I think that Louis C.K. would probably be the first person in our new sexual predator rehabilitation center, if there was one, you know.
We can name the wing
for guys who don't want to be sexual predators but just can't fucking help themselves.
Okay, so what about 9 months? So let's take a vote on 9 months, or let's weigh in on 9 months. Is 9 months too short?
I don't know. How does one even decide?
Yeah, that's what I said. I feel like that's a very arbitrary... It's an arbitrary metric to begin with, and like how long things are.
You originally felt that it was too short.
Because no one had heard from any of the women that he did this to. And oh, I feel like if they had spoken out...
You want a panel.
Yeah. Or if they just like... They haven't really made any comments about it, which I appreciate.
Nor should there be an expectation that they should, because no woman, especially if they're trying to make it in comedy, wants to be just known as the woman who got raped by Louis C.K.
Absolutely. I just feel like if he's going to...
I don't think there should be an expectation that they
I'm just saying if anyone gets to decide when he comes back, it's them.
Not these clickbait article writers who are just like, nine months, how dare you?
Yeah, because to be honest,
if we leave it up to the audience, you know, there's a lot of assholes who don't give a shit.
Yeah, he could have come back the next week and been fine. Like, Brett Kavanaugh still made it onto the Supreme Court.
Let's not go there.
So he could have come back the next week. And there would
have like beer.
Does not give a shit about it.
There would have been the same split, no matter what time it came back in.
Still like beer. Actually, I like wine.
He does like wine.
I finished this whole bottle.
So I feel like a time period is a
white woman.
A time period is a false metric.
That is the worst insult you could ever. Calling me a white woman is nah. I love white women. So we wrap up every episode by saying by weighing in on whether or not we think Louis C.K. of The Cellar has a path towards redemption, and what that path looks like for you.
Yeah.
Who are we starting with?
Do you want to start, guys?
Yeah, I'll start. I think on a very, like, a lot of caveats fall in place. But yes, I think he has a path to redemption there. Mainly because, like we said before, of all apologies, that was, like, the best foundational apology I can think of. And because I feel like at least somewhere inside him, there is that kernel of self-awareness that if you can bring that out and more than just like how he's aware of race and make it more about also being aware of misogyny, then yes, there's a path. Because like we were saying, like the older I get, the more I realize how far I have to go still and like undoing all the years of being raised as a misogynist by both of my parents.
Sure.
And so it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's kind of hard and you need people around you to check you.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily get that when you're a wealthy, powerful white guy. So.
Or Kanye.
Yeah.
Or wealthy, powerful anybody. I mean, all power corrupts.
Yeah, exactly.
So everybody likes that end of that quote with absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the beginning of the quote is all power corrupts.
Yeah. So
anybody who gets in a position where they don't have to give a shit anymore, they stop giving a shit. Yeah.
So to
pathologically.
Me, yeah. So to me, the fact if he's like willing to keep learning and listening when people check him and start putting more people around him that will check him, then that's his path to redemption.
What do you think his path to redemption looks like?
I agree with Gaius. I think the type of apology that it was a good start. I also think the kind of artist that he is, I think because he's a comedian, and I think comedians are probably the most self-reflective in a structural way as far as like artists, I think there is an opportunity there to kind of work on himself in a way that is, because it's going to be public if he's working on himself.
Yeah, sure.
And his, you know, reaction from the audience and that kind of back and forth, I think is a good pathway towards figuring out how to be a new kind of man and hopefully maybe serve as an example to other men that are creepy dudes that are doing creepy shit and may have thought that they were just being kind of just creepy, but didn't realize they were
garden variety creepy.
Garden variety creepy. Maybe he can be that example for other men who need to reprogram themselves, because all men need to reprogram themselves.
The only thing I would add to that is that, yeah, I mean, I would like a booster shot. I would like for him to make another statement.
Yeah.
I would like for him to
keep
say,
checking in with us. Where are you at?
I would like for him to write an op-ed somewhere, obviously not get paid for
it. I want him to
it,
start being as woke about gender as he is about race.
And say, you know, this is what my listening, right? Because he said, I'm going to listen. So what I think I would have liked before he went back out was to say, this is what I heard. Yeah. Right? Because he told us in his statement, I'm gonna take some time to listen. I would have liked to, you know, all right, so what did you learn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things that we do when a kid is wrong, when a kid does something wrong.
See, he's got the money to chill.
Right. But the guy wants to, I mean, this is what he does for a living. This is what he does.
Like you said, it's how he works
to be a human being. Yeah. So. And this is part of his process. And so I have no problem him going back out there. I would have liked to have him make a statement and say, I'm going back out there because that's what I do. Mm-hmm. This is what I do to be a whole human being. Mm-hmm. And I get that there's part of the audience, the general comedy audience, that never wants to hear another word from me. And I get that. I get that. However, you know, this is how I process things. Right. This is my process. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, I would want him to say why he's coming back out there and what he's heard over the last XYZ amount of months. He waited 9 months.
Yeah.
It's been more than 9 months now. But, you know, I would, you know, as honest as he has been, other than jokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other than jokes about what he's been through, I would want him to talk again, because it was the beginning. Mm-hmm. We all say it's the building blocks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was the building blocks of redemption.
Yeah. No, that's a really valid point. And the fact that he still kind of ambushed people by just showing up at the Cellar and asking to go on stage.
Yeah,
you know what?
I'm not getting it. It's just
but
like,
you and I both know that the Cellar like always that. Ambushes yeah. you yeah. with a star.
Yeah.
Right? So they don't tell you what star's going to
like,
be there. And they
like
can't.
People like him and Chappelle,
they can't
announce it there.
You know, I saw Rock there, you know, and I saw Chappelle there, yeah. you know, in later years. And I'd see Rock there working out shit. And you can't say Rock's going to be there. Yeah, yeah. And that day where, like, it was, like, Rock and Kevin Hart and, like, one of the weigh-ins and whatever. There was, like, every amazing black comedian in the last, you know, 30 years was there one night. That's the magical shit. That's why you go to the Cellar on off nights.
Yeah.
That's why you go on a random night
like
to the
Wednesday.
Cellar.
Yeah.
You go on a Wednesday because you don't know who's going to walk in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the magic of the Cellar. And, you know, the owner of the Cellar said, yeah, you know what? That's the part that bothered me the most about what I did, about putting him back on, and about the feedback that I got from it was just that there would be some...
I think there needs to be a caveat. Like, we'll ambush you, but not with sexual predators.
No, and so what he did eventually say, hey, listen, if I put on Louis C.K., once you buy a ticket and you go in, before anybody comes on, I'll tell you, hey, Louis C.K. is going to come on. Right, and that's what he said he would do, because he thought, you know, there's some victims who don't want
Yeah, you don't want, yeah. That's one of those things that you just don't want.
You don't go
have.
To a comedy show to be triggered.
Yeah. To, yeah. Well, or at least not triggered about
I mean, you kind of do.
You kind of do, though. But I think sexual
especially if you
stuff,
sit in the front row.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you go to the front row, you go to get shit. Yeah. You go to like, you go to like look sheepish in front of like 100 people.
Like, I'm not going to show up to the Comedy Cellar and sit in the front row with my white husband and not expect to get made fun of.
Yeah. I already had my whole like cellar shit. Like, all right, what school did you go to? I remember when I went in college and I'm wearing my Fordham undergrad shirt. What school did you go to? And I had ready. F you. Because I know it would give him a joke. Mm-hmm. Be like, oh, buddy, you know, whatever. Like, they'd make that kind of joke and whatever. I'm one of the...
Maybe sometime in the future, we'll be the tribunal. And we're the people that celebrities have to call to say, hey, is it okay for me to go back out there? Be like, nah.
Is that when I can start doing rapey shit?
No.
No?
Never.
But I thought with the power I could do, if I get like this much more power, I could do rapey stuff?
No, we're here to check you on that.
And that's the thing.
That's the beauty. Of it.
I guess you're just not allowed to do rapey
and
stuff.
And I can't do rapey stuff either.
No.
You know? I can't. He can't.
All right. But we'll talk about that. It's universal. It's fair.
And there are female sexual predators, but that's for another episode.
I've been sexually.
You want to talk about?
No, well, we could talk about it in other episodes.
Okay.
All right. So this has been good. I think we all kind of see, you know, we've done Kanye before, and there's a super secret one that we did before that. I think, you know, we see a path here, which is something that we kind of were down on with Kanye.
Yeah.
We hoped for a path, but we didn't, you know, see that was like one, it was a one in a million path. And I think,
and that was before he went to the White House.
At this point, maybe we can do a little update.
Oh, I heard that Kim might be leaving him.
Right. So it's being reported, everywhere that they're splitting up. Is there anything that has happened in the last 2 weeks? And by the way, we did our thing before he went to the White House.
Yeah. Mm.
So before Kanye went to the White House. So all of us are here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of us weighed in on Kanye last week. Has your opinion changed about what's going on with Kanye? And what we said about Kanye in that podcast.
I feel like it reaffirmed everything I thought. I was like, he's too far gone.
I think
went in the middle and you switched back. So
did I?
Yeah. She went Kanye about Kanye.
Yeah.
She went Kanye about Kanye.
He needs help. Like, come on. Like, I think the right wing is using him to embarrass black people. And I'm not going to fall for it.
I think it's absolutely one of the things that,
I'm not going to get embarrassed.
We started with this thing and we felt like we had to build a case for it being mental health issues. And we brought an expert on because we didn't feel like we had the authority and weight about mental health issues to discuss that about Kanye. Because till then, it had been an arguable thing. And I think after listening to what he said in the White House, I mean, obviously, the number one thing I feel is, like, it's sad. It's really sad because now it's not a matter of opinion. I mean, clearly he doesn't have his full faculties. Clearly he doesn't have the ability to speak about any topic without kind of losing the thread or going off somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that in front of the entire world. He made Donald Trump uncomfortable. Yeah. With the shit he said. How crazy does the shit that comes out of your mouth have to be to make Donald Trump uncomfortable?
Because the difference between Kanye and him are basically saying very similar things. The difference is that he means the things that he says, and Kanye is off his meds. Like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, like, the fact that we are, you know, holding him to the standards of someone who has all their faculties, who's completely, you know, sane, for lack of a better term, is kind of ridiculous. And I think that, you know, I get really frustrated because, you know, on his way to this crazy shit. All the people who are bipolar advocates, people who have mental health issues themselves or experience mental health issues, are like, hey, he's been doing this for like a while now. Y'all are just realizing he's crazy. We knew he was crazy months ago.
Is he getting close to bottom?
I think if Kim leaves him, that'll be bottom for him.
I mean, she's bottom.
Yeah.
Clearly has bottom.
Wow. Wow.
Heyo.
Anyway, I think
misogyny still applies. Right,
I think we'll end on that low note.
Thank you so much.
One of our Instagram feeds went out, but yeah, thanks a lot again, guys. You want to pitch anything?
No, I'm good today.
Just add us at BingeClick on Instagram and tune in next week.
Yeah, Juanchde at JUANCHDE on Twitter. Send all the hatred there. That's where the hatred treatment plan is, that Twitter account. Let us know what you thought about this. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Let us know who you want us to talk about. Let us know where we fucked up, because I'm sure we fucked up.